This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, we should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. And I am fired up for today because we've got basically an investor program today. We haven't had one in a while. We've been talking deep about the market, but we actually have someone here who wants to talk about making money and investing in your future.
Such a throwback, but in the best possible way. I feel like, you know, we have Rodrigo Parada on the show. He's a co-founder and CEO over at Triple Harbor Capital. You unfortunately missed this conversation, but this to me is like, goes back to what we used to talk about all the time on the show. And it was such a welcome conversation about, you know, a guy who's really, you know, spent the last number of years grinding and he's finding opportunities and he's excited about markets across the country. He's based out of Montreal or Laval, I should say, but he's operating in other markets and just a really insightful guy doing interesting stuff. So it was great having Rodrigo on the show. And it reminded me of the old days, you know, 2020, 2021, maybe even 2017.
Are you referring to the days when we used to talk about the journey to Kokomo? What was it? It was the path to Kokomo?
I'm talking about the days when we used to talk about the journey to Kokomo and talk about opportunities and get excited. Yeah. And
absolutely.
And Rodrigo brought it and he got me excited.
Perfect. Well, I'm going to be listening back to this one. But before we get to that, Matt, of course, we have the segment that remains nameless, our trivia segment that covers Vancouver real estate and all things, whatever you decide, really. You've had some real ridiculous ones in there too. Yeah, some doozies. But anyways, you got a question for me this week?
We have a new question specifically for you, Adam. So The Economist just came out with their Global Livability Index. So the list is out for 2025. Last year, 2024, Vancouver was number 8 on this list. I think it was tied with Sydney, but it was 8 on the list. And it was the second most livable city in all of North America. It was only topped by Calgary, which was number 5 in the world in 2024. I feel like that didn't get the press it deserved because I don't remember hearing that. But the question
I remember hearing that, and I remember thinking affordability played a huge role in that decision.
Right, right. To put it lightly,
some offense, Calgary. Some offense.
Some offense. But the question for you this week is: where did Vancouver land this year on the list? And how many North American cities bested Vancouver in 2025? And a bonus for where Calgary ended up.
Oof.
But before we get to that, Adam, we have a new listing we wanted to highlight.
Yeah, Matt, we have a spectacular new listing over at our website, VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, where you can find all of our active listings. This one is a beautiful townhouse at Mason, which is a 2015 Boffo-built building. So you know that means quality. And yeah, again, it's a 3-bed, 2-bath, almost 1,500 square feet with a huge rooftop patio with just spectacular city and mountain views. It's also got like a backyard space, tons of outdoor space. It's lovely. It's a small complex. There's only 10 units and you're right across the street from Trout Lake. It doesn't get any better than that. And it's available at our website. So go check it out. And of course, parking and storage as well.
Yeah, that's at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Check out the new listing. And while you're there, Adam, click sell with us because that's what you need to do in order to download our most downloaded PDF document of all time, the sold plan, that start on launch date, basically a document that helps you get your property ready to list and step-by-step fashion, I should say. That is, click sell with us at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com when you're looking at the fantastic photos of that new featured listing. And and you can download the sold plan there. But let's get back to this question. I'm very excited to hear your answers. Just
it's out of how many places?
Well, the list is the list goes on. I think it's like the top 100. But
okay,
I'll give you a hint. It's still in the top 10. It was number eight last year. Where did Vancouver land this year? I shouldn't have gave you that hint. Where did Vancouver land this year, and how many North American cities bested Vancouver in 2025?
And how many North American cities bested Vancouver?
It has
Vancouver?
To be in North America. Yeah.
Okay. And you want me to pick where Calgary landed. Okay, so Vancouver and Calgary,
that's
basically.
It's a bonus. It's a bonus.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm going for the bonus.
You did live in Calgary, so I did. You have unique insight into where Calgary may end up on this list.
Yeah. I can tell you all about the ship and anchor from my 18 to 21 years. Yeah,
from the late 90s.
Yeah, from the late 90s in Calgary. Okay, so here's what I'm going to suggest is Vancouver's at 4.
Oh, okay. How many North American cities beat out Vancouver then?
Well, isn't it all North American cities? What am I missing?
Oh my God. You're missing
global.
It's a global index.
Okay. Well, then here, well, I didn't realize that. So now I'm gonna actually say Vancouver is gonna be 6. And I'm gonna say North American cities.
Now that you're taking in the rest of the world,
yes.
You're gonna bump it back 2 places. Okay.
Yes, exactly. Vancouver is gonna be 6. There's gonna be 2 North American cities ahead of Vancouver. And Calgary is gonna be, I'm gonna say 16.
Okay. Interesting. Vancouver was 10 on the list.
Okay. I have a
number
bit of a
10.
Bias.
Bit Slight of a bias. It was the only North American city in the top 10.
Okay. Makes sense.
And Calgary moved from number 5 to number 18. So actually pretty close.
Oh, I was pretty close. Pretty close with Calgary. Close.
I feel like Calgary might have... I think we saw peak Calgary in 2024. I'm not sure if Calgary's getting in the top 5 again on the best cities to live in the world.
Yeah. What was...
come on.
Whose thumb was on the scale in that year? Anyways, well, what else do we got, Matt? Why don't we... well, of course, we have...
Let's get to our talk with Rodrigo Parada. And actually, he's doing a lot of investing in Alberta. So I guess that kind of tied in. We love you, Calgary. And we love you, Alberta.
We do.
So let's talk to Rodrigo. This is a great one.
Can't wait.
This podcast is sponsored by Atlin at Clayton Crest, a master plan community in the West Clayton area built by Zentera Developments.
Zentera is an absolute force, Adam. They've been nominated for Multifamily Builder of the Year for 10 consecutive years and just won again at the Georgies for 2025 Multifamily Home Builder of the Year.
What's really exciting about Atlin is the West Clayton location. You're within walking distance to the future SkyTrain station, giving you that perfect balance of city access while living in a peaceful, family-friendly community in the Fraser Valley.
And if you have kids or are planning to start a family, there's an on-site daycare where residents get first access. This kind of thoughtful planning is why Zentera's projects stand out in the market.
The amenities at Atlin are incredible too, Matt. A rooftop patio with stunning views, fitness center, co-working space, and lounge areas for events. The outdoor space is extensive with 2 fitness areas, 3 children's play areas, and multiple spots to relax.
With major investments happening in the SkyTrain and the 72nd Avenue extension, West Clayton is set for explosive growth. This is genuinely one of those opportunities to invest in a community before values skyrocket.
And that's really the key here. This isn't just about finding a beautiful place to live. It's about making a smart investment in your future as the whole area continues to develop.
Pre-sales for Atlin will begin soon. Register today at atlincondos.ca. That's atlincondos.ca. Okay, so I'm here with co-founder and CEO of Triple Harbor Capital, Rodrigo Parada. How you doing, Rodrigo?
I'm doing very well, Matt. Thank you. How about yourself?
Very good, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us today.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Right on. So maybe for our listeners, Rodrigo, can you start by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So as you pointed out, my name is Rodrigo Parada. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Triple Harbor Capital. a mutual fund trust that started acquiring real estate roughly 2 years ago. A bit about myself personally, I currently live in Montreal, born and raised in Montreal. And I started investing in real estate in 2018, buying multifamily assets in my home province. And then roughly, call it 3.5 years ago, I started looking at different markets outside of Quebec, did some passive investment in Ontario, and gradually got into the Albertan market with our first acquisition that was done in October 2023. And that was the one that helped us cement this mutual fund trust that we now operate. We're launching our third fund on July 1st, 2025, so in a couple of weeks. And that's what I've been doing for the most part.
Okay, well, we'll get into it. But just a couple of questions, Rodrigo. It strikes me that you started Triple Harbor Capital 2 years ago. That was a time when the market felt pretty rocky. I feel like we were kind of sliding into the place we still are currently. So you start investing in real estate in 2018. What made you want to go out and start Triple Harbor Capital in that environment in, I guess, early 2023? What was the impetus there?
So that's a great question, because the truth is Triple Harbor was born out of necessity. There's nothing else behind it. I wish I had a better answer, that I read it somewhere, or you know, I went to this seminar and my mentor taught me this. No. What ended up happening is that first acquisition that I did with my partners in Alberta, it was a 38 unit in Rocky Mountain House. It's a secondary / tertiary market out there. And we had raised a lot of our capital in registered funds. And initially, I was going to secure a loan against my own personal portfolio here in Quebec while we were doing the optimization and repaying our investors roughly 12 months after that. But my legal counsel at the time said that although that was very nice of me, it might not be the best scenario considering the legal risk behind it. And that's when we did some, you know, some due diligence. We met some advisors, and we learned about this mutual fund trust structure that existed. And that's why we went ahead with it. So to your point, yes, it was a very, let's call it rocky, tumultuous period in the market, but we had an amazing opportunity on our hands. We had our partners and investors that wanted to go through with the project. So my partners and I just needed to find a solution to get it done. And that's what we did. That's how this whole thing started.
And for the uninitiated, and we don't need a 20-minute course on mutual fund trust, but can you, for people that are out there thinking, okay, this sounds interesting, but what the hell is a mutual fund trust? Can you explain it quickly?
Absolutely. So a high-level explanation of what a mutual fund trust is we're basically an investment vehicle for Canadians to invest in currently real estate projects. So all of our projects are held either at a corporation level or a general partnership, limited partnership, a GPLP structure. But because we have the mutual fund structure and we have been working with EMDs and the Securities Commission, we can accept participation from our investors through registered funds and not just cash contributions or cash investments. So at a high level, that's basically what a mutual fund trust is.
Okay, awesome. So we're going to get into the registered funds kind of aspect of it. But maybe just stepping back, Rodrigo, why real estate? What got you into real estate in 2018?
That's a great question. So the reason why real estate? So I have a lot of similar answers to a lot of the, you know, fellow investors in our circle. So I read all the books, Rich Dad, Poor Dad when I was younger, you know, other, like I was listening to Bigger Pockets from 2016 to 2018. And I knew that I wanted to do real estate and I had bought a single family home at the time, but I also understood that the power was to get into multifamily. And I was basically, you know, true story, we were at a table with my family. So I have two brothers and my parents, and we're having dinner. And I realized that, you know, if I'm going to be doing this and I want to pursue this, I would rather want to do it with my family, not just to limit the risk, but that we could all benefit from the rewards. And that's how this thing started, really. We bought a fourplex in 2018, my brothers, myself, and my wife, and we haven't stopped since. That's how this whole thing started.
What in your mind makes a good real estate investment? Because it, just to put, like, for the listeners of this show, Vancouver is a very different market than the Quebec market. I'm not sure where that first fourplex was. You know, we've had people on the show talking about Alberta in the past as well. Very different market than what most of our listeners are used to. So when you're looking, even at back in 2018 and all the acquisitions since, what makes a good real estate investment in your mind?
That's a great question, Matt, because it has everything to do with your own personal situation rather than the market. What I mean by that is in, let's say, your current market, because the acquisitions are more difficult, I think from an investor standpoint, you can't have the same requirements as, let's say, a market in Alberta or in Saskatchewan or even Ontario, right? So, and it's roughly the same thing that we're seeing right now on the Quebec side, on the residential side. What I mean by that is right now, as opposed to what it was way back when I was starting, if you're going to be pursuing real estate investing on the residential side, you need to start with house hacking. Because at the end of the day, we're not in the same game or in the same market that we were before where you could get cash flowing assets from day one. Now it's more of a matter of reducing expenses so you have an opportunity to own real estate and benefit from it, but also you can get into the cycles of refinances the moment that you step into that first property. So I think that's the key to the success is understanding and being completely honest with where we are as an investor on our journey and understanding that there are certain investments that will match that position versus trying to do what everybody else is doing and not really understanding what we're hoping to achieve.
Can you kind of unpack that a little bit further? Like in terms of somebody out there owns a condo, owns a single family home, whatever it is, and they're thinking about getting into real estate investment. Like, how, can you kind of take what you just said and what's kind of a strategic approach to kind of achieving that success that you found?
Yes. So what I would start off with is having an objective look at your personal financial situation. So where are you in your career? Do you love your job? Do you want to step away from it and do work on your business? Like you need to look at where you are currently in your life and what you're hoping to achieve. And then from that point on, it's understanding the different financing vehicles, whether on the residential or on the commercial side, but let's stick to residential for now. And then what you're hoping to achieve. Are you looking for cash flow? Are you looking for equity? Are you okay with staying in your current job, getting your T4, you know, and eventually getting to a point where you have more and more assets? Or do you want to go faster and start scaling up quicker, right? So I think that the majority of the time, what we're going to be looking in our first acquisitions where you're trying to get outside of the single family home space is, can I buy this property and do I have a value add component that it can incorporate in there so that I increase the value in a shorter amount of time and then I can go to my financial institution and get a refinance. And by doing so, the added debt that you get that you're going to be able to take out as equity, right, compared to the original mortgage, well, you can distribute it or reinvest it in another project, another opportunity that will help you further increase your net worth while having the asset have either tenants, manage the added monthly expenses, right? So that's how you would gradually scale up. And I think it's in today's market in our country, all across the country, it's the safest approach to becoming a real estate investor because it's manageable. You're not going into bigger and more complex projects, but it's actually achievable with the majority of our jobs out there in the financing vehicles, right?
When you're talking value add, like in your, are you a handy guy, Rodrigo? Is this like, are you adding the value yourself or are you building out teams? What's the strategy?
I think there needs to be the two components, right? I'm not a handy guy by any means. And when I first did my first triplex renovation that I did in 2020 that I moved in, it was a house hack, actually, exactly what we're talking about. That was during COVID and I had a bit of a downtime. So I went to YouTube University and I tried to learn as much as I could about what I could do myself. So I did that, but I did it enough to get to a point where I understood that my value as into what I do is not necessarily doing the work today. But way back then, I had to start there to learn, to understand the process. But also realistically, Matt, when you're going to get out there and start talking to, you know, other tradesmen or people that are going to help you and you're building your team, it actually helps to know what you're talking about, right? Yeah, so understanding a bit about the work is necessary if you want to do it the right way.
And so you bought, just in terms of your own personal journey, so you, well, I think most people that have been listening to the show for a very long time, we haven't talked about house hacking in a long time, although we have talked about it in the past, but maybe can you break down kind of exactly kind of your steps from 2018 through the house hack to where you are today? Like, I guess what I'm looking for or what I'm hoping to kind of get is the nuts and bolts kind of like building baby steps upon baby steps to build out that portfolio.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Matt. So in 2018, at the time that we did the first acquisition of the fourplex with my family, I was living in a single family home. And what we did at that time is we decided to sell the family home and move into a triplex that we were going to renovate ourselves. So basically, that was the first house hack that I did with my two girls and my wife. And that's how it all started. So we move into this triplex, we take one of the units, we renovate the whole thing, and we had tenants.
And sorry, this is with your two kids and
yep.
your wife?
Yeah.
Okay, I was going to say, man, this is an easier process as a single guy, but wow, okay.
So yeah, well, thank you. And one of my favorite quotes is ad astra per aspera, right? Like to the stars through hardships. So I guess, yeah. You know, I'm living proof of that or a living embodiment of it. So Matt, yeah, just going back to the story, like we move in, we renovate it. It's through 2020. So valuations are going up like crazy. So it kind of worked out in our favor in the long run. So we move into that triplex, we renovate, we're able to increase our rent, refinance. And then we had a bit of capital that we were able to deploy in another acquisition, which is the one that I still live in today. It's a duplex that my brother actually lives upstairs, my business partner. So I'm still house hacking to this day. Because it's a way to be able to do what I do without having to worry so much about my expenses. So if I have all of my recurring expenses covered through my passive income, then I know that I can go out there and make quote unquote moves and keep on growing my business without having to worry so much about, you know, making ends meet. And in a nutshell, that's basically what happened here in Quebec, in my personal path. That's what I did in the house hacking world.
So you buy the triplex, you live in it with your family, you have the two other units. Sounds like you did some renovation work there. Then you refi, you move into a duplex, you're living in one of the two homes in the duplex. You have a family member, but in this case, still a tenant paying rent. What was the, did you do the same kind of value add in the duplex, or what was the next move? How did you get there?
Yeah, so we did the exact same thing. We found this great opportunity in a good neighborhood that needed a lot of love, a lot of work, and we got to work. So everything from the foundation to the roof, which we were going to be doing in a couple of years, was changed. And actually, to be quite honest with you, that was the project that confirmed to me that I will look into doing something different than doing these massive scale of renovations, right? Because markets shifted, costs went up. And I think that we're doing ourselves a disservice if we don't re-examine our thesis and our approach to projects. And I think that that's where we are right now as a group.
Right. And the theses change over time, right? They have to. Different conditions create different investment theses, for sure. Okay, so you change course, and this is presumably when, what, 2022, kind of interest rates starting to creep up, inflation,
yeah. So
out of control, you can't find any trades, no matter how hard you look or how much you're willing to pay.
Yeah, that was basically it. And combined with the fact that when you're investing in real estate and you're going for these residential mortgages, you're going to get to a point that a lot of us retail investors get to is your debt-to-income ratio is going to get capped out. So from a financial institution perspective, even though you're quote-unquote worth more, you can't borrow more to start acquiring more assets. And understanding that around the 2021 year mark, that's when I started getting interested in commercial mortgages and commercial multifamily assets. So the bigger buildings, right? Because it's a different financing requirement that's in there. And I knew that that's where we wanted to go based on the networking that I was doing and the mentor that I had at the time. So I knew that was the path that I wanted to take. So that's where we transitioned from these smaller buildings to looking at larger multifamily acquisitions, but also outside of Quebec, because it was getting very difficult to find good deals here.
So you decide to leave Quebec to look for better deals, and you're looking at multifamily. I guess two questions. One is, what did you like about multifamily? Can you talk a little bit, or I guess unpack? You suggested the financing for sure, but what else was it about multifamily that was exciting?
My best answer to that, Mark, is just the way that it's valuated. So on the residential side, the valuation that you're going to get from a financing perspective is based on comps, right? Your sales in a specific area that were achieved within the last 3 to 6 months. And then your appraiser does, you know, an average of that, and that's your value. When you're doing commercial financing, you have a component that has to do with comps, but it's also based on the net operating income of the asset and the market that it's located in and its associated cap rate. So the reason why, when I understood that, I understood the relationship and how it worked, that really appealed to me, because coming from, again, the residential side, I knew that I had to depend on sales around my area, and that fluctuates with the different market cycles, right? So you're never really sure of the valuation that you're going to get when you start a project of renovation and you're hoping to refinance. Versus the commercial side, there's a bit more certainty when you know what you're doing in terms of your point of entry and also your exit with your refinance based on the metrics that you're getting from, you know, all the organizations out there. So CMHC, appraisal firms. So for me, as someone who was in the business of syndicating deals and making deals happen, I had more certainty. And that was what confirmed with me that that was the right path for me at that point.
And so is this when you go to Alberta?
Yep. That's when I discovered Alberta at the time.
Yeah. So, okay, this is still, I feel like Edmonton and Calgary especially, they've been, they're very different markets than they were a couple of years ago now. But this is a couple of years back. First off, just in terms of, you know, all real estate's local, you know, this kind of idea. Can you talk a little bit about which markets? It sounds like Rocky Mountain Point, you said. So how you came across that market? Are you interested in markets and any fine deals? Are you like, how do you go about it? How do you learn the market? And what ultimately did you like about Alberta? And this is all in relation to, we've talked to people from Montreal on the show again years ago. But like you guys, even you take your dishwashers when you leave, right? Like when you leave. Everybody leaves on the same month, day of the year. It's a totally different world when it comes to real estate. So I don't know. Do you actually take your dishwashers? I might be imagining that. But
I think the dishwasher is the one that stays most of the time, Matt. Okay, so, okay. But the other appliances, they leave. Yeah.
Okay. So see, that's what I mean. It's a totally different world than Alberta. So how'd you learn that market? Why Alberta?
So, the reason why I was able to progress in that market and go with a certain level of confidence is because I had boots on the ground, right? And that's something that I learned throughout my years of being a real estate investor, is my ability to underwrite deals and understand, you know, the mechanics of putting a deal together are secondary to local experts that I can validate what I'm seeing based on their expertise. So I ended up partnering up with two partners that live in Alberta. So that's how I was able to achieve what we were able to achieve in the short amount of time, because I had local experts and I had local boots on the ground. But also in reality is, I think the moment that as Canadians, we start understanding the different provinces and markets and submarkets within those provinces, we end up seeing the challenges that we had in our local markets and how it could somewhat be easier in different places. So the reason why I was comfortable with Alberta, especially with the first project that we were doing, is we were going for a value add project. So, you know, the same model that I've been doing up to that point. But then I look at the numbers, I understand where I can go in terms of rent and it being absorbed. Also in Alberta, you can increase your rents with 90-day notices. So basically you take ownership and then you 90 days later, after having sent that letter, that advice to your tenant, you can increase their rent to amount X. I understood that we could do these value add projects in a shorter amount of time than what I was used to doing in Quebec. And also that 90-day notice component in Alberta, it kind of removes the cash for keys that I was trained to incorporate in my projects when I was looking to optimize assets, right? So long story short, that's the reason why I went with Alberta. I understood that there was a bit more ease to complete and achieve the projects that I was aiming to do. And I had local support to be able to go ahead with these crazy projects that I had at the time.
And how many units was that first project in?
It was a 38-unit.
38-unit. Okay. And are you still, since then, have you moved on to other projects or, yeah? Are
yeah.
So, Alberta, can you talk a little bit about what else you're up to?
Yeah. Well, I'll just finish with that first one. So deal, we bought it at $1.9 million for a 38-unit asset in Rocky Mountain House. So that was $50,000 per door. We had a $1 million renovation budget and we got it completed in 12 months. So we got that in October 2023 and in September 2024, it was appraised at $5.6 million. So we had quite the substantial lift that we were able to get out of that project and return and distribute to our investors and partners. So that was a home run. And after that, what we did is we did another acquisition of an 18-unit in St. Paul. That was an existing 20-year building. Super easy acquisition. Nothing to say there. No value-add component. It was just easy to purchase, quote-unquote. And we also just completed a new build acquisition, a 24-unit in Camrose, Alberta, which is a secondary market of Edmonton. So those three projects gave me an overview of the three types of ways that I'd be dealing with real estate in Alberta, quote-unquote, because I did a value add, I did an existing asset that wasn't too old, but I also did a new build. So that gave us confirmation at Triple Harbor Capital that the next fund that we're launching that is closing on July 1st, we're going to be focusing on value add multifamily acquisitions, and we will be stepping away from the new builds that we had done because there's more yield that we're seeing in a shorter amount of time and also better returns for our investors because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, just to go back to that value add, I mean, it was purchased in, sorry, can you just, the timeline there? Because that was you said home run, I guess. That was a home run.
Yeah, it was. So purchased in October 2023 at $1.9 million. We put in $1 million worth of renovations and then we refinanced in September 2024 at $5.6 million. So ballpark 12 months.
Wow. Congratulations to you and your investors. That's nice.
Thank you.
Work.
Thank you. It was a great opportunity and we just knew that we had a good one. That's why as I was saying in your first question, right? Like that's the reason why we went ahead with the creation of the Mutual Fund Trust and it was born out of necessity because I didn't have a guarantee because there's never anything guaranteed in real estate, right? But the moment that I had the property under contract and I was doing my underwriting and I understood what we were dealing with and the potential outcome, I knew I had a good one on my hands and I needed to see this through.
So can you talk about what, are you seeing more opportunities today or fewer opportunities when you're looking for these value-add properties? So I guess the assumption is you're in Alberta exclusively at this point, and you're looking for value-add properties. Is it a more attractive market right now for acquisitions in your mind in those spaces?
I think it depends on where you're from. What I mean by that is people like you in BC, me in Quebec, Ontario people, we look at Alberta and yeah, we find opportunities because it is completely different than what we're seeing in our local markets. What I am seeing though in Alberta is that there's a lot of focus on development and new builds, especially Edmonton right now is probably the hottest market in the country for that type of asset class. But going back to our business and what we believe in, I don't necessarily believe in doing what everybody else is doing at the time. So we're purposely staying away from new builds and focusing on value adds right now, because although that there's a lot of people in that space, we feel that we have a bit more advantage in that asset class than if we were doing the same thing as everybody else and going for new development. So yes, there's still great opportunities. I think there's going to be more. There's always opportunities. I think it also is a reflection of our experience as deal makers and how many tools do we have in our toolkit to close the deal, right? Because that's what it is at the end of the day.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible. This podcast is sponsored by Fenway by Caliber, bringing 209 new homes and 24,000 square feet of retail space to Willoughby Town Center.
And this retail component isn't just adding to the area, Adam. It's enhancing an already thriving community hub where neighbors connect over boutique shopping, great food, and everyday essentials. This is one of the final new construction opportunities to own in the heart of Langley's Willoughby Town Center.
And speaking of Langley, is it me or is Langley all you hear about these days? It's become such a powerhouse with over 7,000 businesses, the population set to double by 2040, and that SkyTrain extension arriving in 2029.
What's incredible about this location is that you're getting the best of everything. Your steps from the Langley Events Center, currently undergoing a massive $149 million expansion. The new tennis center and future Willoughby Community Center are right across the street. Plus, you've got the new Smith Athletic Park just down the road.
The location really is unbeatable, with 8 schools within walking distance and just minutes from Highway 1. And what I love is that this is a Caliber project. They're Langley locals with decades of experience who really understand this community. They've partnered with Polyco Group to bring decades of development expertise to Fenway.
With Langley's population set to double and transit connectivity expanding, this is your chance to be part of BC's fastest growing community. Register at fenwayliving.com. That's FENWAY living.com.
Fenway, where small town heart meets urban sophistication.
Hi, I'm Michael Yu.
And I'm Morgan Brown. And we're the founders of Oakland Realty. We have 9 offices across British Columbia,
serving all major markets of BC. If you're an agent out there, just like Adam and Matt, who happen to be licensed at Oakwin, please reach out to us at oakwin.com/join and type into that message box, the rep, and you'll receive a free gift and a promotion when you meet one of our leaders.
Thanks so much. And we're looking forward to meeting with you.
See you soon.
Can we talk a little bit about RSPs? Because I read a post of yours about RSPs, and if you could explain, not read the post, but kind of talk our way through this post about kind of expectations, if you have $1 million in your RSP and what it actually amounts to, and also about the mutual fund trust and how that kind of plays in. But first off, so you had this post, it was very clever. You know, so you have $1 million in an RSP. I think everybody, you know, a lot of people, that's a hefty goal, but it's a goal of a lot of people for retirement. It's not exactly always what people think it is. And can you just break down exactly what you were talking about? And
so basically the post at a high level was just showcasing that we have these amazing vehicles, financial vehicles in our country, right? And they're supposed to help us deal with retirement. So the moment that you start doing a bit due diligence and understanding how these programs work, these financial vehicles, kind of like all of the registered funds, RSPs being one of them, not everything is always as pretty as it seems, right? And for the case of this particular article, or the thing that I wrote, was just this hypothetical scenario. If you have $1 million in your RSPs and you need to cash out before that you get to the threshold that the current government allows you, which is 70 without, you know, the taxation, well, you're going to get taxed, even though you benefited at one point from putting in there, which is a great strategy. If you don't plan accordingly, it's not just a win-win. You're going to have to pay as a Canadian, right? And I think that the purpose behind that post was just highlighting this, because I find that in this country, unfortunately, we're not educated enough on the financial side to really understand what's happening with our finances and what we're going to be left with once we stop working. And the reason behind that, Matt, is currently what we're doing at Triple Harbor Capital, as I was mentioning earlier, is that we can work with our clients, our investors, RSPs. So instead of leaving it in a, you know, a mutual fund within, you know, your financial institution that gives you 8 to 10% that's following the S&P 500, which is great, it's a good strategy, we have something alternative within our fund, which enables you to participate in these real estate acquisitions and use those RSPs to buy equity or units in the limited partnerships. So it's a different way of approaching what you end up doing with those types of products and what it means for your own future, right? Because there's a difference between just leaving it there for retirement and hoping that you don't need it before you can take it out, or you can get your money to work for you in a different way, which is what I'm all about.
So getting it to work for you in a different way, can you just spell that out for people? So I have $400,000 in an RSP. And I'm thinking, man, Rodrigo seems like a good guy. This sounds pretty interesting. That Rocky Point deal sounded exceptional. Like, what exactly would putting the money to work in real estate through somebody like Triple Harbor Capital, what does it look like?
Yeah. So how it looks like is that basically my fund works with what's called an exempt market dealer, an EMD. And their purpose for our organization is to make sure that whoever we end up working with, we can actually work with them. Because you can't just accept funds here and there, not worry about the business relationship between the money and the fund. So that's the conformity aspect of dealing with an investment fund like ourselves. So what they do is that they would make sure that we can work together, that you qualify to work with us. And then from that point on, you would basically just participate in our project. Every project that we do has an amount that we're hoping to achieve, and there are projected returns. And then that participation is acquired through your registered funds. So right now, the project that I'm doing, we're launching this value-add fund on July 1st. We are currently projecting between 15 to 18% annualized, and it's going to be a three-year term. So you participate through our EMD in that project. We make the acquisition, we repurpose these buildings, we optimize them, we refinance them, and then at the end of the 3 years, we distribute the profits back to your registered fund account, and then it keeps on growing through that means. And bonus, we actually give equity for participation for people that invest through their registered funds. And in this particular case, there's 25% equity of all of the portfolio that we're going to be acquiring that will be given to our limited partners. So that's what I mean when I say making your money work differently for you. It's not just necessarily about returns. It's also about a piece of the pie in terms of the equity portion ownership of the portfolio.
Is Triple Harbor Capital's goal to sell the asset, or is it a long-term hold, or what's the exit strategy there?
So that's a great question. We, because of the assets that we currently own, we're talking like B types of buildings. The new build is an A type, so that's long term. Sure. But I would say that it's actually part of our shareholder agreement. We don't plan to sell any assets within 5 to 7 years, just to make sure that we can deal with the market, do our project, potentially have one or two refinance cycles, and maximize the returns to our investors. However, being in the business of real estate, I cannot predict where the market is in 2, 4, 6 years, right? So then it becomes more about, as a group, do we feel that the disposition of the asset is at the right time? And I would say that ballpark, Matt, I'm not looking to sell an asset until I have at least a 50 to 60% valuation based on what we paid initially. I think before that, it doesn't make any sense. I would rather hold it, benefit from, you know, owning multifamily assets in my portfolio and everything that comes with it.
So then I guess I'm just thinking, somebody in Vancouver thinks, okay, I'm interested in getting involved. What's the process? Is there a minimum amount? And what does that kind of look like?
So right now our offering is, the minimum contribution that we accept is $50,000. And how it looks like is that we would get on a call, I would present the opportunity, and if you're still interested to work with us based on what you've seen, then we have you talk to our EMD, our exempt market dealer. Once they're done with their conformity aspect and we can work together, then you participate in the project and then you're a passive investor in our deal. And then you get the regular updates, access to all the documentation, in all of the acquisitions that we're doing, and also regular updates on the projects themselves to know where we're headed and what we're trending towards. At a high level, that's basically what it is, Matt.
Totally passive, pretty exciting returns. Sounds all right.
It's not bad. And the reason why we're so confident about what we have is because we've done it in the past, right? I don't think that Rocky Mountain House opportunity was once in a lifetime. Sure, we bought right, but also I do believe that the model that we followed and the template that we did can be replicated. And actually, this is something that I found out recently by the mortgage broker that we're using, but a lot of the bigger REITs in our country are now going back into the existing assets class versus trying to push for new development. So we're starting to see a shift in there. And I do believe that's because they recognize the yields that are in that types of asset class. So I know that what we're doing is good. We're extremely excited and happy about the way that things have been unfolding. And let's keep it going.
Let's just say somebody gives you, invest $100,000. So you get that kind of 15 to 18. Is that paid out annually?
It will be paid out at the end of the 3 years, because as an investment fund, all that capital that we've raised and we hold, that's our operating capital for the next 3 years. So it will enable us to go and continue our acquisitions as we complete these projects. So that's why there's only a distribution at the end of the 3 years of the whole pie.
And then so after 3 years, you're getting, let's say, 15 to 18% on that $100,000. Do you get, and then after presumably a refinance at that point, do you get that $100,000 back, or do you get part of it back? What's the plan there?
The intention is at the end of the 3 years, we've completed all of our refinances. Because again, Matt, the way that we're acquiring these buildings is not with CMHC debt, meaning that our terms is a year. So we can go in, acquire the building, optimize it, and then refinance within 12 to 14 months, as we did in Rocky Mountain House. So the thesis behind it is, let's say I've already acquired a 12 unit in this fund, okay? We're optimizing it and we will refinance it within the next 10 to 12 months. The moment that refinance is completed, we get back the capital that we injected and then some. And then we go to market to buy another asset that will be part of this fund. And we do this for the next 3 years. At the end of the 3 years, whatever we've accumulated as a fund, whatever the return on investment is, that is what will be split between the limited partners and the general partners at that point.
The only other thing that I'm kind of curious about is the kind of equity component. So let's just say there's a 10-year hold. You sell it after 10 years, you know, there's a nice little chunk there, and that goes back into your registered accounts as well.
Actually, no. The way that we've structured our offering is at the end of the 3 years, once we do the distribution back to the registered funds or cash, whatever it is, the investor now has a choice. Do they sell their participation back to us at fair market value, so we pay them then, or do they stay in the partnership as passive investors until, quote unquote, the end of time? And then what's super interesting about that, and I really appreciate the question, Matt, is because once I've redistributed back the profit to your registered fund account, you have the choice to decide, how do you hold your equity? Do you hold it under your personal name, or do you want to hold it under a hold co that you have? You have the choice after the 3 years. So I'm assuming right now that the majority of our investors will stay in long-term into this limited partnership, and they will decide if they want to hold their equity under their personal name and benefit from the advantages there, or if they want to transfer the equity to their hold co or whatever structure that they have, and it's more beneficial for them. It is way more flexible depending on where you are in your investing journey at that point.
Fantastic. And just to be 100% clear, so it's anyone can participate. If you got 50 grand, you can participate.
No, this offering is for accredited investors and friends and family. Okay. That's the key. So, and I appreciate you saying that, because I want to make it clear with the audience. As a fund manager, I'm still learning how to navigate my business, right? And we did this offering with the current setup because we wanted to get to market fast. We wanted to make the capital of our investors work fast, and they already fit that criteria. In the future, if we are to launch a different fund, we will not have that restriction. We will go with something that we can have more investors invest in so that they fall into the category of what's called an eligible investor, which is a bit different than an accredited investor. So for this one, unfortunately, accredited friends and family only.
Okay. Switching gears a little bit, Rodrigo, you know, I started reading some of your posts. They're really interesting. And one thing that struck me was you had this interesting take on the opportunities, not in real estate, but in buying businesses at this point. And now this is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. We don't, we like to think there's kind of an entrepreneurial bent to the show, but we generally talk about real estate. But can you just outline, you know, what you're seeing? I think yours was Quebec specific, but presumably this has to do, it's kind of a demographic opportunity and the demographics are across the country. So can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing out there in terms of business acquisitions right now?
Absolutely. Pleasure. So the reason why in the past few months I've been more interested into buying a business is because I started reading some books, mainly the one by Cody Sanchez, Main Street Millionaire. And it gives a good breakdown about what the state of small businesses is into. And then I started digging a bit more into my home province, but then realized that it was across the country. That basically, let's keep it a high level for a moment, but there's a lot of baby boomers that started businesses and they're very successful. So they have a good structure. They've been working at it for years. And let's say that they had children. Well, what they did is that the majority of the time, those kids, they were able to pay them higher education. They got a degree, they got a diploma, something. And they're not interested in taking over the business. So there's more than we actually know and believe of these people in that situation across the country. So at that point, it's just a matter of getting in contact with that owner and seeing if there's an acquisition that is possible. So that was my first understanding of this situation. The second one was when I understood the financing components behind acquiring a business. Now, I want to be super clear, okay? I am not talking about buying myself a job, which is the trap that a lot of people get into when they're looking to buy a business, right? I'm not looking to replace my salary that I would get at a job, let's say, and getting myself a structure where I work for it in the business. That's not what I'm looking to achieve. What I'm looking to achieve is to buy something that's already existing that has, you know, a general manager or director or somebody that's already paid to manage the business. And I can come in as the owner and hopefully take it to a next level with my skill set. That's what I'm looking to achieve. And that's what I refer to when I'm talking about buying businesses. So Matt, just going back to the financing portion, I'm sure that you've seen this in real estate, but there's this whole notion of VTBs, right? Vendor take-back mortgages, which in the real estate world, I would say in the nicest way possible that financial institutions aren't too keen on them, right? That's not the way that they like to operate. And most of the time, a lot of these mortgage contracts actually say that they don't want to see anything in second rank behind them. So when you get into real estate and you understand about that strategy, you end up realizing that it's not as easy as it sounds. And it's actually a bit more challenging to pull it off. In business, it's the complete opposite. Because when you think about it, if I'm looking to acquire a business from someone and they agree to give me a VTB, the bank or the financial institution that is lending on that acquisition, that transaction, they will look at the VTB as a form of security that the business will not crumble because the previous owner is actually transferring the knowledge to you. And also, the owner doesn't really have a choice but to kind of help you so that they don't lose on their VTB. They want to make sure that they get paid. So it's kind of a win-win situation, right?
Right. And for people out there that don't really understand the vendor take back in this situation, like, can you spell out exactly what that means? So you find a business, the guy or gal is 68, you know, their kids are all lawyers or doctors or whatever. They've done well. They're like, man, all I want is to find somebody nice to take over this business at a fair price. And I'm willing to kind of work with them. So what exactly does that look like?
Well, in this case, this person wants to sell their business, let's call it $1 million. I'm just putting a number out there, okay? And through your conversations and negotiations, you explain where you're coming from. If they're not familiar with the VTBs, and you explain to them that it's actually well seen by the financial institutions. So in this case, you can negotiate whatever the amount is. Everything is specific. But in our case, let's say we get to an understanding that I will buy the business $1 million, but the owner will give me a vendor takeback of $200,000, meaning that I will get financed on $800,000 now and not the whole million. That VTB, usually how you want to structure it is you will give a form of interest to the owner, right? So 3-5% is usually what we see in the industry. And that's added, and it's an added bonus for them because they're helping you out. So it's you don't even need to hide it when you go to your financial institution. You say, I'm buying it at this. This is how it's structured. This is where the debt is. And then you move on from there. And hopefully what you end up doing is you optimize the business from day one, and then you're able to repay that VTB in 2 to 3 years, whatever is decided with the previous owner, so that they're out of the transaction and you don't have a debt with them anymore. That was paid out by the business itself.
But in the meantime, because they're still kind of quasi-involved in as the bank, essentially, in some way, but they're also still, they have an interest in you succeeding in with their business.
Absolutely.
Right? So they kind of act as a mentor.
Yes. And that's why I would highly advise that if somebody is interested in doing this, to include in their contract that there's a transition period, right? That they're going to be there supporting you for X amount of months with the established responsibilities. And also you might want to throw in a non-competition clause in there just to make sure that they don't close up shop and they go open something right across the street, right? But that's the weird part for me, Matt, is that I'm understanding now, gravitating in that world a bit more, that this is kind of standard. That's how you structure these agreements, yeah. Right? It's understood that that's how it is. And I just believe that the reason why I think that it's a bit easier with the businesses right now than the real estate is there's way more opportunities for this out there. And also, the financing vehicle behind it is different. So whether or not you're going with a big six in commercial lending in terms of banks, or you're going with the BDC, you might get something that's incredibly advantageous to you. You could get some of these loans financed up to 95%, even 100% if structured properly. So it just creates a different environment that is dependent on what you're hoping to achieve as goals, right? Again, in full transparency, the reason why I'm looking at buying businesses is because I want to get cash flow. I want to get cash flow in the form of a dividend out of a business that is already operating that has that sitting on its books. That's the only reason why I'm going for businesses right now. And then we'll see where that takes us, right?
Mm-hmm. Irons in a couple different fires by the sounds of it, Rodrigo.
Well, that's the beauty of the journey that we're on, right? Like you end up meeting you end up meeting people that are doing so many amazing things. And it's, if you're, you know, just a bit curious and you don't mind asking questions, get introduced to different things. And then it's just about going down the rabbit hole and seeing where that's going to take you, right?
Actually taking action, right?
Oh, absolutely. It all starts with that.
Well, maybe that's a great place to leave it, Rodrigo. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions to end the show. Do you have time to stick around for that?
Absolutely, please.
This podcast is sponsored by Jethro Condos in downtown Langley. Over 100 homes under $425,000 with one-bedroom suites starting at $399,900.
Here's what's incredible, Adam. These condos actually cash flow. When's the last time we could say that about new construction in the Lower Mainland? With these entry-level prices, the numbers actually work for investors.
And you're in the heart of downtown Langley, surrounded by trendy cafes, artisan bakeries, and parks. The area is experiencing incredible growth and new development.
Yeah, the location is absolutely key. Jethro is steps from the future Langley SkyTrain station. Get in before that transit connection transforms the area. Because once that SkyTrain arrives, you're looking at direct connections across the Lower Mainland.
Jethro is a Whitetail Homes project. Whitetail Homes has over 25 years of experience with quality construction and finishes that exceed expectations. We're talking vibrant interiors, expansive windows, and thoughtful design.
For realtors listening, they are offering amazing cooperative incentives. This is a rare opportunity where the fundamentals make sense. Affordable entry, cash flow potential, and positioned for major transit infrastructure, an all-around win.
Register at jethrocondos.ca. That's J-E-T-H-R-O condos.ca.
Jethro Condos, distinctly Langley, uniquely yours. Okay. Well, I can tell by the conversation you're a prolific reader. One book you would recommend to our audience?
Can I give three?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm currently finishing 10X is better than 2X. I think that really is important for people that are looking to get the best out of themselves. It's a different approach to how you view your output. It's really helped me. My second one would be The Richest Man in Babylon. I think it's full of knowledge that it was applicable 3,000 years ago and is as applicable today in our relationship to money. And the last one would be The Art of War, Sun Tzu. I just think that it's a go-to for me. I read it almost every year. And every time I read it, I end up thinking or understanding something different at that point.
Wow, that last one was a curveball. I like it. In the last few years, Rodrigo, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
Time blocking. That's a great question. I am someone that just deals with whatever's thrown at me. And that's okay for a while. But if you're not conscious with the time allocated to tasks, tasks will spill into everything else and will affect your life. So time blocking for me has really helped me stay focused and actually deliver more instead of falling prey to this obsession that we have nowadays, I find, in today's society of just being busy.
Well, being busy and just being reactionary, right? If you're just reacting to things all day, you feel busy, you feel accomplished, but you're not actually pushing the ball down the field, right?
There you go. One.
And you know what? And it's a great reminder because I feel like that's something I've thought a lot about and implemented. And then 3 months later, you're like, oh man, I'm back where I started. you gotta keep reminding yourself. So no, that's a great one. Yep. What have you been binge watching lately, or a movie recommendation?
I don't watch too much TV, actually. Yeah, I kind of.
Are you looking for deals?
Well, yeah, but also I don't know, man. I get super tired at the end of the day, and I just want to relax. You know, I fall asleep super early. I wake up early. But wait, I still have something. So I recently watched on Netflix, there's this show by Shaq about Shaquille O'Neal. You know, like he bought back Reebok. And it's about him taking the business back to where it belongs in the basketball world. So that's one that I actually finished, I think, yesterday or the day before.
I didn't know that. He's involved in Reebok?
Yeah, he's now president of Reebok basketball. And Allen Iverson is his vice president. So the series is just about them bringing it back to number two as it was in the 90s NBA. Kind of interesting.
Yeah, that's actually a great one, and I haven't heard of that. Okay, that's good. Favorite band or music?
Favorite band? Wow. You know what? I have too many. Because I grew up, I'm fortunate enough to have grown in the period of time that I grew in with, you know, I grew up surrounded by hip-hop. I was a break dancer, but I also had my dad that listened to classic rock. I have all the Latin background, so I have all that. I love electronic, I love EDM. Currently, I'm big into drum and bass, so too many to say. But I don't know if I have to get one favorite band. Man, I don't know. Sorry, I don't know. I don't have an answer.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Too many.
Last question for you, Rodrigo. And we really appreciate your time. Something you have purchased for under $1,500 that has had a positive impact on your life recently?
My time book. It was $12. Got it on Amazon, super simple. And it's a every day it keeps on giving. That's my answer to that.
I like it. I like it. Well, that's great. Well, so Rodrigo, how can people find out more about what you're doing? I should say you're worth a follow on LinkedIn for sure. I feel like I've been enjoying your posts. I think I wanted to ask you about that coffee shop, but we didn't get there. But how else can people find out what you're doing and if they're interested in getting in touch?
LinkedIn is the best one. So just look me up on LinkedIn, Rodrigo Parada, Triple Harbor Capital. I'm usually on there most of the time during the day. So I answer pretty quickly. And that's the best way to get in touch with me.
Well, thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Matt, thank you for yours. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So there you have it, folks. Our discussion with co-founder and CEO over at Triple Harbor Capital, Rodrigo Parada.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that conversation, actually. I did get a chance to listen back and pretty exciting conversation altogether.
You know what? Like I said, I love the, you know, from house hacking, all these ideas that people used to be talking about. I felt like it was everywhere you went, you were running into somebody who was excited about real estate and growing their net worth and cash flow and all the rest. And it was just such a great kind of refreshing conversation to have. He's clearly such a nice guy and such a bright guy. And it's just great to see that they're having a lot of success. So yeah, that was a great conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And it reminds me, it's funny, but we make these kind of investment strategies that really are over the course of, you know, a 20, 30 year timeline. And then meanwhile, we revisit them every year and change directions contingent on what the market is doing or what, you know, what we think is happening with the economy, but stay the course and also control what you can actually control, right? You can't control what's happening in the world or the markets and, you know, put your head down and stick with the plan. So I think there's some real wisdom there.
And it's kind of exciting to talk to somebody who's exciting about making money, honestly. I feel like that's something that somehow the culture's shifted, you know, and it's not the end all be all, but it's about taking care of your family and you know, creating stability and security. And there's no shame there. So it was great having Rodrigo on the show.
If setting yourself up is a bad thing, Matt, that's a scary place. That's a scary place to be culturally.
Yeah, no kidding. But the tide's turning, I think. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the Live Wire. This is where you get access to VIP pre-sales and incentives. You get deal of the month, you get stats, different types of stats, the catalog, we're sending out all the episodes. It's a good way to keep on top of what we're doing over here at the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. We also have, of course, tried and true, private client services.
Yeah, Matt, and if you are not using PCS, you're standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor-level information for free. It's available over at your fingertips at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is the best way to be monitoring new listings and the real estate market in Vancouver. And it's the kind of information, you know, that where it's there when you're ready to look at it. But that portal basically gives you insights that you're just not going to get otherwise. So check it out at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where you can sign up for your own free account.
Yeah, if you want to talk about that or anything else, you can also give me a call. 778-847-2854 or Matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that Kokomo line, importance on Kokomo, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
That line's blowing up now. Rodrigo just set fire to that line.
That's right. Have a great week, guys. Get inspired. And we'll see you next week.
Take care.
2000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.